Here we are once again. It's the news, according to me. Yeah, it's Tuesday morning, May 20th, 7:35 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Chance of rain today where I'm at. It's rather cool outside. I do believe it's 45 degrees outside, actually, which is not too abnormal for this time of year. By the way, there's more snow. There's more ice, the polar ice caps, than of previous years. It's climate change. It's not I thought the polar ice caps were supposed to be gone by now. Didn't Al Gore say something about that 25 years ago? Yeah, I think they were wrong. Welcome to the show, folks. It is 7:35 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. I am recording this in my home studio this morning. I hope you have as good a day as I have already had. No matter what happens the rest of the day, for the most part, I think I can call it a good day already. And when I explain the facts to you, you will understand why I have that perspective. In my cup, I have creamy Big Train chai with Almond Joy creamer. And it's hot. Good stuff. As my backup cup, and coming into a close second to be my first cup, if it was any other time of the day, it would be my number one cup. My backup cup would be something else. I have homemade sweet tea. Not only just homemade sweet tea, with the proper amount of sugar and steeping. I have fresh peaches in there, boys and girls. It is the pesto resistance of the liquefied refreshment center over here on my right side of my desk. And I have really nothing else to talk about. My day's fine. Everything's good. World's good. I got it all right here. As far as the morning goes, that's what it's all in here right here. Till things start rolling along and happening. But it's all I need to start my day. I have, already done my devotional stuff and read my stuff and listened to things. But, there we go. That's first order of business for the day. The proper drinks, proper liquid refreshment is important. And I got my dog by my side. He's cooling down. He's chewing on a little chewy thing right now. You can probably hear that. But once he hears my voice, usually in the morning, usually he settles right down. Of course, we don't have the crazy cat who likes to antagonize him out right now. He's back in the bedroom. The sweet cat is out prowling around, and she doesn't bother him at all. So, yeah, there you go. That's it. That's all there is, folks. So appreciate you listening to the show, and we're just going to call it quits while we're ahead. I think we're just going to say we'll just end the show right here. And call it a day. I think we're not going to do that. Okay. So, anyway, a couple things I want to talk about. And one of them is serious. This is, and I truly mean this. However, there, unfortunately, like everything else in this guy's life, there's huge question and scandal. So scandalous now that even MSNBC and CNN are actually kind of jumping in on this. They're just piling on is what they're doing. And Joe Biden's got a lot of issues, a lot of problems. He's been a very troubled man most of his life. He's been spent over 50 years in political, I'm not going to call it service. I can't, these people who think that they've been public servants for so long, all the sacrifices you've made living on the American dole. Becoming, multimillionaires. All the sacrifices you've made. You don't make a sacrifice, go raise your own support and go preach the gospel somewhere in some It just belittles the people who've actually made sacrifices in their lives to help people, to help serve people. And I'm sorry. I appreciate some of the people who are in office and what they do. But I also have a great deal of consternation. That's a word. I have a... You'll keep using that word. I don't think you know what it means. Joe Biden has apparently prostate cancer that has advanced to level 4. I think it's level 4, 5, 6, whatever. I don't know what the levels are, but it's stage 4, whatever it is. It's extremely bad, and it has actually made its way into his bones, into his nodes, and all kinds of things. It's pervasively, it's into his body all over the place. And now what's... Of course, the scandal about this follows on the heels of the cover-up of his mental decline and his cognitive decline. And, of course, with Jake Tapper's book and everything that they're coming out with, we didn't know. They're trying to retain and regain some kind of credibility because they realized that they blatantly were sticking up for an obvious issue that was happening with Joe Biden, trying to cover it up. And then they're down there trying to say, we had nothing to do with cover up of this. You know, hatred and rage are something that really, and fear blinds people to no end. And everything we saw from the left-wing media throughout the campaign and throughout the last 8 years, really, and really longer than that, it's been very subtle under the surface. But I think that Trump kind of brought everything to a boil. But they have always used some sort of fear of within themselves to motivate, and usually it's hatred for or envy of someone else having power, as we spoke. I spoke about that the last show. It's this whole thing of having power is really it's a canard. They have made the idea out that when they're in power, they're going to change things. They're going to do this. They're going to do that. Whatever. They're going to go back after their political enemies. It has become a circus show that's no longer about for, of, and by the people. It's for, of, and by them. The only people that matter are the people that are over the security wall over there and the others inside the Beltway in Washington. And that's American people are sick and tired of that. And I think I'm not speaking for everyone in America, but I think that most people would agree that they're tired of politicians and tired of bureaucrats and regardless of which side of the aisle you're on. I read this thing yesterday, the other day. I think my wife might have sent it to me. And it talked about how it was an interesting thing. I wonder if I could find that. I'll read it on tomorrow's show if I can find it. It goes on about this whole thing and talks about the other side and how this, that, and the other thing. And what's funny is no matter which side you're on, you could read this thing and think it was the other side because of the way it was written. And it was very well done because it just kind of showed the polarization issue and how that it transcends the party divide. It really is how both sides feel about each other, regardless of, like I've said, we all want the same thing. It's how we go about getting there that I think we have the argument with. And if we could just come to that realization, if we could just come to that kind of discussion, I want to see people taken care of health and I want to see people healthy. I want to see people be able to have any kind of education they want. I want to see them reach, aspire to their dream, to reach their dreams, to to experience things in life that are important to them and have, you know, I want to see all that kind of thing. I want everybody to be fulfilled in that. But I don't think it's going to happen, and I don't think the best way to go about that is by having the government step in and make it happen or try to make it happen. You know, you become a cog in their machine instead of you being having the liberty and the freedom to, and autonomy is kind of a two-edged sword. You know, God doesn't want us to be necessarily autonomous, but yet he wants us to have the freedom of choice and thought and free will, if you will. But he wants that will to be unencumbered and untainted by lies and misdirection and deceit and manipulation. So he wants to be the one that you just look upon and you are drawn to. He doesn't want people to be forced to follow him or serve him, or that would be totally outside of who he is. You make your choice in that respect. He wants you to have the opportunity to make that choice. In first course, first of all, you have to believe that he even exists. But it goes much farther beyond that. That in and of itself is not. This idea that, you know, we are so divided is not necessarily that's the way they want you to stay. They want you to stay divided. And they, by being the people who want to maintain power and manipulate you into the masses so that they can stay in power and be on top and have the control and be the important ones. And Joe Biden has spent many, many years in that culture. Now, he has prostate cancer that has gone well beyond what I've known several people who've had prostate cancer. Just normal everyday people who just have, you know, just and they get it caught early. They get it, you know. It's really is nowadays. It's much less of a risk than it used to be. One of the reasons is because they can find it earlier. Now there was a doctor on CNN, a well trusted, well known doctor, being interviewed on I think it was CNN, whatever Brian Stelter, whatever channel he's on, and he's whatever network, and he ended up saying, "Oh, there's no way that Joe Biden, to have it at this stage, there's no way that it could have just been within the last 4 years, even especially within the last 100 days. They've known this. They've had to have known this. I would imagine that part of the deal. I was part of a." Insurance plan for a while that once a year or once every 2 years, I needed to get blood work done. I had to have a physical and get blood work done for my health, for my insurance. Well, you didn't have to, but you had to get a discount or what it was. Lowered your premium or something. I don't know. Well, in the process of that, they're testing for all kinds of things. And I would think that the government bureaucrats and the health care that they get, which is top-notch Cadillac plan, better than most healthcare workers get. I would think that part of that would be, you know, regular PSA screening and you know, all the stuff that they get. And in that process, I would think, especially at his age, I would think at some point he was getting regular screenings for prostate issues. They had to have known this. Now, you know, at one point, Joe Biden did say he had cancer. And, of course, the media came out right away and said, oh, he had a little skin polyp or something way back in such and such, you know, back in 78 or whatever. Okay. So that was what it was. Well, that, maybe it wasn't. Maybe Joe actually let it slip that he knew he had this cancer. Now, why he wasn't fighting it, why he wasn't, you know, how it has grown into what it was without, maybe he was fighting it. Maybe that's part of the scandal and the cover up that we didn't know about. All along with the whole thing with the cognitive decline that all of us saw, but couldn't say anything because we were kooks if we said anything about it. But now all of a sudden, Jake Tapper writes a book to make all kinds of money with it. And it's not the book sales that are going to make him money. It's the book deal. It's going to make him money. There's somebody approached him with a book deal probably. And he said, hey, I want to write a book about this because I want to try to protect myself. I want to try to change history. In spite of all the videos out there, all the stuff out there on the internet of me chastising people for saying that Joe Biden had a cognitive decline. How dare they say anything about that? And you got, of course, you know, Morning Joe with best Biden ever. But wait, there's more. There's more Biden. Wait, there's more scandal. But now, having said all of that, and despite all of that stuff that surrounds this whole thing, I do want to sincerely say that I deeply feel for what he's going to go through, what his family's going to go through with and everything, this whole thing involved, and what they've gone through, this whole process of having prostate cancer. Any kind of cancer. My dad had cancer, died of cancer, but within about 3 months of having it discovered, it was pancreatic. And he had the operation. I can't remember what they call it. It's a Whipple or whatever they call it. Take out a bunch of stuff. It didn't last much longer after that. But he was already pretty much, you know, in his system, in his body. But the, you know, they expected him to last maybe a year. He didn't make it that far at all, not even close. But he, it's just very hard to watch a family member go that way. But of course, now you can at least say goodbye. You don't have to, you know, it's in some ways for the family, it's better because they can say their goodbyes. They have some closure. For the person going through it, it's much more difficult. For when you have a tragic end where you're just over all of a sudden and within a second, and an accident that just takes your life, it's, of course, much easier for the person going through the process of passing. However, it's and in some cases maybe better for the family. However, it's not depending on how the person has prepared their life, but it's still there's no closure. Unless you were living each day as if it was your last and reminding each other of that. It's as if, you know, they're supposed to be here. They're supposed to be home. They're supposed to, you know, how could this person just all of a sudden be gone? That's very difficult. That's very, very difficult as well on the family. So it's just, I in some ways I look at this and I think, okay, well, at least, you know, hopefully there's some semblance of family, I don't know, what's the word I'm looking for? Congeniality within the family. It's hopefully there's some real I don't know. I think and the reason I'm hesitating here is I see the Biden family as being very messed up. It's a very messed up family, and I believe there's reasons for that that go way back into Joe's early life, and I don't want to get into all that. But anyway, you know, he's still with us. He's still alive. And of course, they're going to start piling on with this idea that, they're pointing the finger at each other, pointing the finger at the administration, pointing the finger at everybody out there about the whole cover-up of Joe's condition. Of course, now they're all jumping on the whole cancer thing as if that was the big issue. That didn't affect his functioning as president. His cognitive abilities and his mental decline is more an issue of how he functioned as president. Now, this whole thing of the auto pen as well is coming up because all these pardons were probably signed by the auto pen. My problem was with the pardon themselves. I don't care. You know, he didn't contest the signature, which is that's when the point comes out. If he's not going to contest the signature, he's going to say no. It's my signature. It's my stamp, basically, is what he's saying. I endorsed it, even though I didn't physically endorse it. It's still not being contested by him. The problem I have is with the pardon itself. You can't. Since when are we just giving people diplomatic immunity, so to speak, for anything that they possibly have done over the last 14 years? Any federal crime that you committed over the last 14 years, we're going to go ahead and just erase that. So just it's all gone. Or anything that comes up, anything that they find on you now, any possible crimes you've committed, you're immune from all that. Just got to get out of jail free card. You start over today. I don't think that's what the pardon was meant to be. The pardon was meant to be for something that you found guilty of, and then you were pardoned for that. Or even something that you were just indicted for. I just step in. Because President Ford did that for Nixon. I don't think he was ever fully impeached. I don't think the process was actually completed, and Ford stepped in. No, he resigned. Nixon stepped down, resigned, and Ford stepped in and pardoned him just to get it over with. Which I think was the right thing. It's one of those things where one of the reasons they did is because we just need to move on. The country needs to heal, and this has gone on too long. And I think looking back on it, and I was a very young individual at that time. I was in grade school. I was probably 11 years old, 10, 11 years old. And looking back on that, I think it's hard to tell. Coulda, shoulda, woulda thing. Looking back, it was probably the right decision, even though it probably cost them the election and Carter got in. I think it was still probably the best thing for the country just to move on from that. I mean, it was a fall on your sword moment, in my opinion, because it was very unlikely after that Ford was going to win the next election. And I know one of the things that young people, at least, were arguing about was young families, was that Ford was never elected. We're not going to elect a president who was never elected. Well, he's going to be elected if you elect him. That never made any sense to me. Is why this guy can't be president because he was never elected into any office. How can the guy, because we elect him. That's how he gets elected. He's All of a sudden, now he's elected. So, Trump was never elected into any office, and Trump got elected in 2016. I think that was one of their big things was, well, he's not a politician. He's not one of us. He's not polished. He can't do this. There's no way this guy's going to win. He doesn't know the machine. And they forget that's not what he's about. Of course, they're still in that same playbook. When you look at what they're trying to do, and of course, Chuck Schumer sometimes comes out and says all the quiet stuff out loud. Well, we're working on it. We're trying to get his approval ratings down. We're going to work like crazy to get his approval ratings down. That's all that matters, because it's the end justifies the means. They don't care whether the getting his approval ratings down means that they're going to have to lie, cheat, and steal to do it. We're going to get his approval ratings down. And they think that that's what all that matters. Then they can start talking about impeachment. But until then, they can't really talk about it because he's still popular. And he's winning over popularity all the time. In fact, there are hardcore leftist Trump haters who had nothing good to say about this guy, all of a sudden coming out and saying, you know, maybe he's not so bad. Maybe this isn't, you know, maybe he's not doing such a bad job here. You know, some of the stuff is working he's talking about. Maybe we've been off the deep end here. They're starting to question their ridiculous, just savage rage just over and over and over. And it's, you know, you can only live in this moment for so long. Now, there's actually even some people on CNN, actually some commentators, that have come out and said that, you know, maybe we need to be the party that has a vision, that has a goal, other than just being the get Trump, hate Trump. Trump. Let's protest everything that Trump does party, the anti-Trump party, because they're still allowing Trump to define themselves. This goes back to I saw this happen one time in very clear example of this from my perspective. I saw a church plant happen. We had this movement within our church where all of a sudden these young college kids started coming to church all the time, and there was a large group of them, over 50 of them, and the thinking was that they were going to plant this church in another area that this thing was happening. Now it all happened. A good friend of mine was kind of at the apex of in the center core of this thing anyway, within kind of the nucleus of what was going on. And there was one. And it always kind of seems like it happens this way. There was a youth group or a youth college age group, and it all kind of, I won't say revolved around, but it was all kind of drawn to this one family who had a couple of kids. One of them especially, I think, but both of them, they were kind of just caught on fire for God. And it was just this one of those things where they, and literally this one girl, she said she would just go out and start a campfire, sit and just meditate on God. And then, of course, they had started having meetings at their house outside. They started like having campfires there, and they started having these meetings, and people would show up and friends would come over, and they started having worship times and praying and testimonies and all this stuff that started happening. And next thing you know, it is this group of college age kids. It just became ridiculous. I mean, ridiculous in terms of how it grew and how it just caught on really quickly. And a friend of mine he'd hosted a couple meetings at his house, and it was really very encouraging and very, very inspirational and very much a move of, you know, God on these people's hearts. And it was just, awesome. It was one of those times where you look back on it and you're like, man, we didn't realize we were kind of in the middle of something that was such a cool thing that was going on. We did kind of in the middle of, you don't recognize what you're even in it. And so we had, they decided to plant a church. And the whole thing was kind of revolving around, of course, and this was because of another couple of kids that were in the church that, that kind of made this decision. But there were, they decided they were going to be the untraditional church. Everything that they were going to do was going to be not, was not going to be based on tradition. We're not going to do anything traditional. So they decided to have, instead of having a Sunday morning church, they were going to have a Saturday night church. And instead of starting at 7 o'clock or 6 o'clock or 6:30 or whatever it was, they're going to start at 8:08. And so everything about what they were doing was to try to not be traditional. Well, you know, so what time are we going to meet? How are we going to have a service? Well, normally traditional service does it this way. So let's do it this way. Everything was antithetical to the, was the antithesis of a traditional church. So they wanted to make it non-traditional. And at some point in doing all this stuff and everything that they were saying and doing, as I was attending some of the, they had like small group meetings, like a Bible study type thing. I was attending a little for like, I helped lead worship for a couple of them or whatever. They just brought my guitar and was playing. And what was surprising to me, and I guess what opened up my eyes to this whole thing was, in the middle of it, I realized, because they had announcements that they were doing some kind of announcements at one of their Saturday night services. And I happened to be there. I didn't go to many of the Saturday night services, by the way. I just only went probably four or five, maybe. But it was closely associated with a lot of people who were there, the leadership and the pastor that ended up being kind of the lead pastor that was there. I knew him very well. It was in a home group with him for a while. And the at one point, it was like, you know, you're still allowing the traditional church to define who you are, because anything that's tradition, it's like, because you've now become the anti-traditional church, that now still defines you. You're not listening to God. You're listening to, we need to be the anti-church, the anti-traditional church. Now, they're not anti-church, they're anti-traditional. They want to be everything the opposite of traditional. Well, is that, did you specifically get a word from God to say, do everything in a non-traditional? Anything you do that's non-traditional, that's where I'm at. It wasn't so much about following him as it was about opposing something else, which worked for a little while. It was cute. It was fun. It worked. Everybody kind of liked that whole, oh, yeah, we're non-traditional. And then everybody started getting married and having babies. A few years later, of course, that's what kids do. People met in the church, and they start, all these college-age kids, their, you know, hormones are raging. They start to end up getting married, having kids, become families. And they realize that Saturday nights are not the easiest time to meet. So they start having meetings on Sunday morning. Everything starts to become much, much more traditional, because they're finding out that that kind of fits into life a lot better, especially in our culture. It just works better. And, or it just works anyway. Well, of course, it wasn't long after that, because now they're just like every other church, that they ended up kind of dwindling away. And because the whole momentum was all the whole thing of being non-traditional. And once you become traditional, now what are we doing differently? What's other than having church and being, you know, koinonia and the whole thing. So people just started kind of gradually drifting away from that. And part of that was because, again, core leadership changed. There were some things that changed, and just that changes everything. And it was, that always brings in some turmoil. And the expectations that are there and that kind of thing. And it's then you get into the rifts, disagreeing and walking out. So that's what young people do. Even old people do that. So this whole thing, I don't know how I got off into this discussion. But this idea that we're going to be the antithesis, that we're going to be the party that opposes Trump, that's become their identity. So Trump is still, and they don't realize this, is at the core of who they are. If Trump went away today, they would claim victory because they, you know, Trump's gone. We, oh, yay, yay, the witch is dead, whatever. 86-47, whatever it is. That whole thing. So what are we left with? What's your vision? What's your goal? What's your, well, anything. We're just going to go ahead and get rid of all of Trump's executive orders. Well, how'd that work out for Biden? He started erasing everything that Trump did, good or bad, didn't matter. If anything he did was bad, in our opinion, so we're just going to get rid of all that, even though if there's anything good, doesn't matter if it's got his name on it, it's going away. That was the attitude of the Biden administration when they first started. If it's got Trump's name on it, it's going away. I don't care what it did or what it's good for. And then we're going to, if it was good, we're going to put it back in place and we're going to call it ours. But anything that's in the public out there, like closing the border, anything, and the border was under control under Trump. Biden steps in. And all of a sudden, it's the Republicans' fault that Biden can't control the border. Oh, we have this bill. It's all legal. Everything's good. The bill wasn't about the border. It was, now keep in mind, the Democrats always lie on this issue. And I don't know why. They can't just be honest about it because that would, I think that would at least understand, it would at least define who they are. When they start talking about comprehensive immigration reform, they're not talking about making the border more secure and safe and being able to import people, have immigrants come in easier or anything else. What they're talking about is no stipulate, just letting everybody in. That's what they're talking about. They're talking about an open border. Just like that's what they had under Biden's administration. They came up with this bill that they were going to try to push through. We got to control this border, obviously. And this only happened within the last year and a half of Biden's presidency. Because they realized it was going to be a hot topic issue for the election. So as they were rolling into election season at the end of 23, I'm sorry, at the end of 22. It's 2020. No, it was at the end of 2023. In 2023, we got into 24. The primaries and everything start at the end of 23. And they get into this whole thing and they realize that they're going to have to make some changes because it's a hot topic issue. So they come in and they say, well, we've got this bill. We've got this great big bill. It's going to be, this is border reform. We're going to hire a bunch more agents at the border, they were processing agents. They weren't going to be secure. It wasn't going to be guards. They were processing agents. They were going to make it possible for more judges to be put into place to just handle border processing. All the asylum seekers that were coming across the border illegally. You break into the country illegally and then you claim, oh, asylum, asylum. No, that's not the way it works. You apply for asylum at a consulate. And yet, you shouldn't be allowed due process if you came in any other way. If you came across the border illegally, then you should be booted back out, come back in through the line and request asylum. We'll talk about giving you a... Now, how many countries did you pass through before you got here? Because that's the problem. Asylum has nothing to do with, we're going to fly you from Kukumgari, whatever it is, to here to the United States because you need asylum because you're politically being persecuted. That's not the way it works. You go to the next safe country and apply for asylum in the United States from there. And you remain there until you're in a safe place until you're hearing to get into the United States. That's the way it's supposed to work. That's not what we were getting under Biden. And my understanding is it was all because it was the opposite of what Trump was doing, and then tried to blame it on the Republicans for not passing the bill, which had 2/3 of it was all about Ukraine. But, you know, part of it was about the border, and even the parts about the border had nothing to do with the issue of actual border control. It's all about border processing. All of a sudden, you know, Trump steps in and all of a sudden the border crossings practically stop. The fentanyl traffic stops. The human trafficking stops. It's you know, there's still some, but it's virtually nothing compared to the millions that poured across the border over the last 4 years. So here we are. We're in the middle of this mess. Now, my understanding is that SCOTUS, the Supreme Court of the United States, they apparently have given Trump a victory in this respect. I guess they extended the stay on the decision to whether or not to. There's a big controversy out for a while. Everybody said, "Oh no, the Supreme Court just told Trump, you know, that he can't deport these people." All it was a stay on the initial injunction. So it wasn't. And I'm not a doctor. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a financial counselor. I'm not a constitutional scholar. I've read it, but that the thing about this ruling was that it was just an extension on the stay. Now my understanding is they've actually come out with a ruling. I haven't looked at this in with any. Scrutiny. Yesterday was a very busy day for me, by the way. That's why the show was recorded on Sunday night. And the my ability to, you know, keep up on any news yesterday was minimal. In fact, even until the evening, I was going to listen to some in the evening, and I think I had set up a playlist. I got in bed to listen to some videos, and I made it through halfway through the first video, and I was out like a light. A very long day. Moving my boat took us, and we did it in record time. Going from St. Joe to Michigan City, and it was less than five. I think about 5 hours, which was 30 miles, 34 miles. I think it's actually 36 miles from port from slip to slip. It's 36 miles. Made it in 5 hours, which is better than 6 knots the whole way. I think I saw 8 knots at one point, but it's the whole speed on the airplane, whole speed on the boat is 7.8. So we were pushing that pretty well. And it was all downwind. So that was tailing winds most of the way. So all the way, actually. Sunny day, great for the most part, sunny and decent weather. A little cool, but hey, it's better than sweating your, you know, crazy. So we, yeah, it was a good day, other than some slight mechanical issues with the motor, but, you know, it's a sailboat. So we, it was very, very fun day. A couple of guys that I sailed with, they're very experienced, which was it's always good the first sail of the year to have some people on board that are, know what they're doing. But, it always just makes it more relaxing. The, more enjoyable. So the, anyway, getting back to this whole thing, the SCOTUS apparently ruled in favor, I think, of about 500,000 deportees that are going to be allowed now. I think that they had a final ruling on it. And this might be under the Act. I'm not sure if it's under the Act, the Foreign Enemies Act, Foreign Terrorists, I'm not sure what it's all about, Foreign Enemies Act, I think I can't remember what it's called. We'll find out. We're gonna dig into that more for tomorrow. Wishy-washy Wednesday. We'll talk more about this stuff. Today's supposed to be Topical Tuesday, and I'm just kind of hitting on a lot of topics that I have not had a chance to talk about a whole lot in the last little while. I did talk about Comey. I think it was yesterday. Yesterday's show was mostly about Comey and the issue of this 8647 thing, and I think I pretty much mashed that one into the ground. So I'm not going to talk about it much again today. But other than to say that. It has come back to bite him. It did get him some notoriety. You know, any press is good press. It's to some extent. He probably sold some books. And again, the book deal is not about selling the books. The book deal is about signing with a publisher or signing with somebody who wants you to do the book deal and they're going to upfront, they're going to pay you, and they'll even provide you with a ghostwriter. In many cases, they'll say, we're going to send over a ghostwriter. They're going to get this book done. We're going to get a book deal done. Here's your 10. And once it's completed, you're going to get $1 million now, and you're going to get another $10 million when it's completed, or whatever it is. It's ridiculous what they do. It may not be that much. I don't know what he's making, but it's that's kind of the way they do the offer, though. They'll provide you some money up front. You do the book deal, and then they pay you off at the end of that, or over the course of a couple of years. And you might have to do a book tour. It's part of your contract. So you have to go around and be interviewed by, the company sets all this stuff up for you. And you go around, you have book signings. This is why they go around and these people don't set this stuff up. So who was it? Bill Barr, the former AG, he wrote a book right after he got out of office the first time in 2020, after Trump, I think he was the AG as Trump was stepping out of office. And so he wrote a book, just one darn thing after another. He said one damn thing after another. I think it was the name of the book. And he went on this book tour. And of course, that he was getting all kinds of notoriety. He was being interviewed on some television shows, some heavy shows. He's also having to do some book signings in some big bookstores here and there. Of course, most of this stuff now people buy online, but people still do buy books. And he was going on this big tour, and he was being interviewed by all these people. And then this is what happened. Of course, now Bill Barr did not write this book. You can't tell me Bill Barr, busy AG that he was, had time to write a book while he was working for Trump. There's no way that happens. So this company, I'm sure, approached him and said, "Here's a contract. Here's a down payment. You'll get this right off the bat. This is up front for signing with us, and then you're gonna work through the process of doing the ghostwriter. We're gonna have this book accomplished and finished by X date. So you have to work with this person and get everything done, so they got everything ready to go. Get this book done by X. You're gonna complete your part of it, and have the interview done with the ghostwriter by such and such a date. And there's usually multiple meetings with the ghostwriter." Once you get that done, then you go to the process of editing the book. So they'll send you back a draft of the copy, and you go over that with your, if you want to self-edit, whether you want to send it to an editor of your own, if you want to, whatever you're going to do, then of course they have their editors, and the whole thing goes together, and everybody reads it, and everybody's looking at their page. They still have mistakes in it all the time, which just makes you wonder whether anybody's really looking at this stuff or not. And they go through that whole process. And then what ends up happening is they set you down and they say, okay, here's a schedule. We have set up all this company, this marketing company has set up all of this, all these meetings, all these places, and we're going to provide you with travel. We're going to set up the travel arrangements, whether it's a bus or plane or however we're going to get you around. And you're going to go on a bus, you're going to go on a book tour for 3 months or a month or whatever it is. And they set up everything. The person who writes the book doesn't set up any of this stuff. You think they're calling, hey, I'm going to call over to the whatever the bookstore is in, Podunk, Iowa, see if I can get in there and do a book signing today. That's not what's happening. There's people doing all this stuff. There's marketing people doing this whole thing. And it's not the person paying for it is not the person who wrote the book. These are the people who are the middlemen, the people who are trying to make the money on the book, and they will. And then they publish the book. And of course, once you get your book tour done, everything's completed, then you get the final amount of your payment once the book. The person doesn't really care. What they make on the book is minuscule pennies compared to what they make up front with the book deal. Brian Kilmeade, who has a morning show as well as a radio show, writes a book about every 6 months. No way, no flipping way in the world he's writing a book every 6 months with that kind of a schedule. He's not writing that himself. He's got a book writer. He's got a ghostwriter doing the thing for him. I guarantee you probably Fox News is probably behind the scenes working with maybe a marketing company. I don't know, somebody, because there's a lot of people who are commentators for Fox who write books all the time. Constantly writing books Bill O'Reilly was one of those people. About every six months, a couple times a year, he was coming out with a book. Now, since he's left Fox, that's not been happening. I think he's maybe written three books since he left Fox. That's been years. I haven't kept track of how many. I don't think that, of course, he doesn't get anything out of them. For a long time, he had no platform whatsoever other than just some little 15-minute. He had like a, was it a 10-minute, 5-minute thing he used to do? It was like a thing that people throw on the end of the tail end of their shows. This is the O'Reilly Minute, or whatever it was called. O'Reilly Perspective, or whatever it was called. He was one of the most popular Fox News contributors in the evenings. Of course, I think he resigned. I don't think he got fired. I think he resigned. But he left Fox because of some kind of a scandal that nowadays nobody would care about. But of course, back then it was a big deal. And of course, now Tucker Carlson got fired because he was pushing the limits of what Fox could deal with, even though he was the number one guy on Fox. So, of course, now Gutfeld he pushes the ball pretty far across the line as well. But, however, it's a little different atmosphere, a little different culture there with Gutfeld. But I think it'd be pretty tough for them to fire him. They would. They could. They probably would if they needed to. But they made some bad decisions in that respect, I think. I think they only do that about once every few years where they realize, we kind of burned ourselves on that one. So this is where they're at with this stuff. And it's – yeah. So these book deals, not what they appear to be, folks. Let's just put it that way. Typically, the books that they write are – they could say what they're saying. They might have a 200-page book, and they could have said everything they wanted to say in about 20 pages, maybe even 10, probably 5. Could have made their statement, and it still wouldn't. And much like this show, there's just a whole lot of fluff, and so there's no. I probably could have said everything I needed to say that mattered in about 2 minutes. And it's most of that was about my cup. But it is, and it's just like the Sean Hannity show, the radio show. I've said this many times. It starts 5 minutes after the hour, after the local news and all the advertisements are done. And then it goes into this bumper that lasts about 10 minutes of all these clips and music and stuff, and just, let freedom ring. It's the whole thing, and then. So all this stuff, and then he gets on, and he kind of introduces himself, and he kind of talks a little bit, and then he goes into a little monologue. What he calls sets the table. And he has these little talking points that he goes through. And then he has guests on. He'll have a couple guests every hour, but he two or three, four sometimes, short form interviews with people. Always the same people, typically. And But he gets done with a little monologue. Then he has a commercial, of course. And does a little. He comes back and talks a little bit more. He might have a guest on the first half hour. And then all of a sudden he's got another commercial. And, of course, it's at the bottom of the hour now. So he's got you got to have local news and weather and the national news and all the stuff that comes in. And then you go back to, now he starts into his little interview. Now, during the interview, he keeps interrupting everybody he interviews with all of his talking points. He makes his point, and he asks the person, what do you think about it? He'll go on and on and on and on and ask the person what he thinks about it. As soon as the person starts to talk, and he interrupts him again and says, with his talking points again. It's just the typical format of Sean Hannity. So this is why Sean Hannity is not popular. He doesn't let anybody talk. He just interrupts them all, and it's always the same people. So within the course of 3 hours of his radio show, he maybe got 30 minutes of content, something that he actually says or someone says. And so that's a whole lot of fluff. But that's the way these books are written. A whole lot of filler words, a whole lot of stuff. They talk about a whole lot of stuff, and they'll repeat themselves over and over, which just fills space because they're required by the book contract to have 200 pages or whatever they have or whatever many pages they have. You have to write this many words, you have to have this many pages, and this is the deal. Okay, so that's how the ghostwriter does it. They'll repeat themselves. You're going to find this now in what's happening, which is interesting technology with AI, because what's happening now is people write articles that they publish in different places, or people who have written articles in the past. And what they'll do is they'll take that article and they'll put an AI voice to it, and they'll have it read with this AI voice. And there's only about a dozen or so AI voices out there that everybody uses them. And there's a couple that like everybody uses that a lot, way too much. They're way overused. Many of them have British accents. And of course, if you have a British accent, that makes you sound much more intelligent, of course. Dumber than a box of rocks, but you sound intelligent. And so it goes on and on and on. With this, they'll have they'll have like a 20-minute video, and you realize that this is like they keep repeating themselves. And they'll say the same thing over and over, and they said that they said in the first 5 minutes. And it's like, well, how are you? Why are you? But when you look at news articles, when you read through an article, many times the article is written that way. It goes back to and revisits something that you already said before in the previous. That's it's called a reader's theorem, I think, or something like that. It's because you need to repeat something. When people read something and they read through a paragraph, they only retain about 20% of it at best within the time that it takes to read the entire, say it's 2 pages of information. Each paragraph is lost. To the tune of you lose about 80% of it by the time you get to the next paragraph or get done with the next paragraph, I think it is. So each time you do that. So by the time you get to the end of the article, you might retain 30% of the last paragraph, but you've only retained 20% of all the other paragraphs. And probably the very first paragraph, you've probably only retained 15% by the time you get to the end. So it's this diminishing return thing. There was a study about this. So what happens is as you're writing the article, the typical theory is during that article, you want to repeat the main topics, the main points at least 3 times throughout the article to get your point across. So there's this refreshment, and so theoretically it builds on that 20% supposedly. At least that's the way the majority of people that are readers that way. Some people can read and retain really well. Some people can't. So you're working on the averages here. But that's kind of the way that when you listen to some of these videos on YouTube, it's a 20-minute long video, and you realize they've already said this, and they're going back over it again. But that's why. It's because it's a writer's style, not a video style. In my opinion, video gets redundant and gets old and boring. You realize they're doing that to you after you watch the second video, second or third time you've watched a video that's doing that to you. You recognize it right away. And you're like, I'm going to listen to the rest of this. It's all going to be the same thing over and over again. It's getting old. It's interesting information, but the problem was they could have done it all in 5 minutes, much like this show. So I have... Now, having said that, I realize I've been blabbing along here for almost an hour, and I didn't even realize. Apparently, getting out on the sailboat is very inspiring for me. I feel clear, and I need to take a nap now. But I don't know. Maybe it's this peach tea. No, I know what it is. It's the peach tea. That and that ground beef wet burrito I had after I got done sailing yesterday. Those two things. So, as we're approaching the end of our hour here, folks, I want to thank you for listening. Listenership is up again, which is good because of the consistency of things going on here. But sometime this week, I guarantee you, it's not going to be on Thursday, but it will be one of these days this week, there will be a live show, hopefully with video. We'll see how that works. And I've been saying that for the last 10 months, but we'll keep trying it. God bless, folks. Have a great rest of your day. See ya.